Jazz here, and I am so digging the GeekCast Radio Network. Transformers, Golden meets the eye. Transformers, robots in disguise. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. This is Static. When Gear and I aren't fighting bang babies, we like to listen to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the Secret Origins Podcast Tooncast Crossover Interview. I am your host, DFG1 Mike, and joining me is Lupus Convoy. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir.
Yes. Amazing, amazing things have happened.
I never thought this day would happen.
I do wish it would have happened when Secret Origins was still running, when we were still going through our episodes. But I'm super, super excited. I just finished an interview with Jason Marsden, who voiced Gear in Static Shock. He also voices Max Goof from the Goofy cartoons and House of Mouse and a Goofy movie and all that. And I had mentioned to Jason that, oh, hey, you know, since you were Gear, since you're Static's pal, can you help us out with getting to talk to who we're going to be talking to today? And that is none other than the great Phil LaMarr.
It's like the Holy Grail.
Yeah, it's going to be so awesome to talk to Phil. Every time I see, he is one of those, I've learned that he is, and it's more so with his live action stuff, his live action television and stuff like that. He is kind of like one of those quintessential guys that'll pop up in anything. I don't know if you saw a few weeks ago, you don't watch The Big Bang Theory, do you?
I do not. I know, for shame.
I'll have to send you the clip, but they were going to have a guest spot with LeVar Burton.
Oh, awesome.
And to me, Phil is that type of person that they'll just show up at random in live action television, stuff like that. When I was doing research for this, I had no idea he was in an episode of Wings as Gil the Mechanic.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, and I was like, Wings? Like, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, Phil's just, it's going to be so awesome. So do you have any thoughts before we get to the interview?
I'm going to be a little starstruck, but I can't wait. I think this is going to be a really fun interview.
Oh yeah, it's going to be so, so fun.
I got a vibe tells me I should be sitting in on this scene for a while.
Hello and welcome to the GeekCast Radio Network's interview. I am Mike Blanchard. Joining me is Michael Caminiti. How are you, sir?
Doing good.
Today we have the great privilege of talking to Green Lantern from Justice League and Jazz from Transformers Animated, as well as like a million other things that he has done, Mr. Phil LaMarr. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Very good, very good. What do you have any what current projects are you doing right now? Can you fill us in on what's going on in the world of Phil LaMarr?
We're doing more Clone Wars episodes. I play Bail Organa and Kit Fisto on Star Wars The Clone Wars. We just finished up the ADR on Futurama, but it looks like we might have some more Futurama to do very soon.
Awesome.
That's good news.
Yeah, nothing on paper for me yet, but there's talk.
Talk is always good.
it's better than not talk. Yeah, what's the Oscar Wilde saying? It's like, the only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Yeah. My thing is, I'd rather get a no than no answer at all.
Exactly.
Just to get us started, can you give us like a quick summary of your upbringing and how you became a voice actor and got into acting in general? I mean, I didn't realize how much acting you've, like actual on-camera acting you've actually done. I just sought out Gil the Mechanic from the episode of Wings that you did.
No, I was I was primarily a stage and TV actor for many years. Although my very first professional job that I got my SAG Screen Actors Guild union card on was a cartoon I did when I was in high school, the Mr. T cartoon.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
It was a really, really bad cartoon. You know, it was a Scooby-Doo knockoff, you know, designed to capitalize on Mr. T's popularity. You know, he had a cereal, he had a cartoon. You got, back then, you know, in the 80s, you know, you merchandised across the board if you could.
Yeah, we are Transformers fans. We know all about merchandising.
Oh, yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, I did that when I was in high school. And then didn't really do voiceover for many, many, many years. Mm. I would talk with you know, my fellow actor friends about, we really got to get into voiceover. Okay. And then never do it. It wasn't until after I was on Mad TV that I started doing voiceover, partially because we were doing animation on the show. We had a lot of claymation pieces that they used the cast as right. the voices of. And just having that bit of time behind the mic, I think, really helped, you know, when I actually started pursuing, you know, real animation.
Yeah. One of the Mad TV skits I watched in prep for this was the Thanksgiving episode.
Oh, yeah. That was, yeah. God, what was the name of that one? More? Or something like that. Yeah, I remember it was written by a woman named Jenna Jolovitz. That was a fun sketch.
Yeah. That was really, really funny. Since you kind of mentioned, like how much of a transition was it from leaving Mad TV into jumping right into voice acting?
Well, they actually sort of overlapped. The people who cast Mad TV also cast Futurama, and that's how Dave Herman and I got brought aboard. And I think that was actually while we were doing Mad TV still. I know Dave was doing King of the Hill a lot at the same time he was doing Mad TV. And I think I'd started to do a couple of shows before Mad TV ended, including Futurama.
Mm-hmm.
And Family Guy came out of Mad TV. I do voices on that. The Fox executive who worked with Mad TV had found this young kid named Seth MacFarlane. And she asked us, me and Alec Borstein, as a favor to do some voices for this presentation this guy was going to, you know, put together to try to sell the show to Fox. And, you know, that sale went really well.
I can't imagine it not.
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at where it is now, yeah. I mean,
yeah, all the popularity.
Yeah, one of the most successful primetime animated shows ever.
If you could still be working on one show that you've worked on in the past, what show would that be?
Samurai Jack. Just
because
it was such a good show. It's the kind of show that I could show to anybody and know that they wouldn't be turned off to it. Even if they didn't find it, you know, something that they wanted to continue to watch, there was always something to appreciate. Either it was the artistry, the humor, the action, just the design of it. I mean, it appealed on so many levels to so many people, like women, you know, adults, children, whoever. There was something there that I think everybody could, you know, latch on to.
I used to, when I could watch it, I thought it was just amazing. Like, not just the animation and everything, but also the voice acting that you and the rest of the crew had. And I do have to say that Scotsman is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. Yeah, those were just great episodes.
On the flip side of that, and I hate asking this question, in general, what are some of your favorite and least favorite shows that you've worked on?
My least favorite shows are the ones where the checks don't clear. And fortunately, I haven't had any of those.
That's good.
There's always going to be stuff that, you know, you're more into or less into.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some shows that I wouldn't watch that I've worked on, but that my kids would love. I mean, and then there's, you know, the opposite. There's shows my kids watch. My kids watch a show called Word Girl, which I just love. I would kill to do a voice on that because it's so much fun. I'm trying to think. No, there's not really. I mean, voiceover it's such a fun job. Even if the show isn't great, you're usually working with great people. So it's hard to you know, bear the kind of negativity needed to answer that question.
Yeah. Well, on the flip side of least favorite, what about some of your favorites that you've worked on? I mean, it was a question for both. I mean, what about like some of your, like the ones you most enjoyed working on?
Justice League, because I mean, I grew up as a DC Comics reader. I was not a big Green Lantern fan as a kid. I was a Batman guy. But being able to do that show, and I mean, the way they used, you know, DC history and comic book continuity and deviated from it, and in fact, in many ways, made it better, was just a joy as a comic book fan. You know, because you'd be sitting there reading a script and go, I know where they got this storyline.
How many times did I do that?
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody, you know, the people who worked on it were so talented. You know, Bruce Timm and Dwayne McDuffie and, you know, and the artists. I mean, some of the artists they had working on Justice League were people that I was huge fans of, you know, as a comic. I'm like, oh, my God, he's here? You know, got to take my book and go upstairs. Justice League was definitely one of my favorites. Samurai Jack, Clone Wars is great. It's funny because the Clone Wars micro series, I think that actually killed Samurai Jack, brought me back to Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, it was just so good. I'm trying to think what other favorites. Futurama, although it's funny because at this point it feels more like just a part of my life than a show.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for, you know, going on, I think, more than 10 years.
Yeah. Once you get shows that are like that, it seems like it's a part of everyday life, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I always find that you don't really settle into a character until after you see it fully realized and animated. You know, because the voice is really only one part of the character. I mean, we're part of this huge collaborative. I mean, you know, the backgrounds are as important as the voice. I mean, no one of them by themselves would really be worth watching. So we all have to work together. And it's always so hard to do a show at the beginning because I just can't seem to get a solid handle on the character. The scripts are always different. But once I see it, like, oh, that's the show. All right, let's go do it. You know, from that point on, which is usually a year in,
yeah,
it's the process is from my perspective is always so much easier.
Out of all the characters that you've either voiced or played in live action, I mean, what are some of your absolute favorite characters that you've done?
Oh, live action?
Anything, live action, voice acting, anything. What are some of the favorite characters of your, like, characters that you can look back on and say, I really, really enjoyed doing that, or I really, you know, liked where that character went?
Well, really, honestly, the most rewarding characters, I think, I mean, of course, you ask me tomorrow, I might get a different answer. Jon Stewart, just because of the breadth of what I got to play as that character. I mean, over the four seasons, I mean, that's without a doubt the best writing and the best, you know, dramatic arcs that I've, as a performer, ever gotten to play. you know, he was on trial for murder. He was in a love triangle, you know, he had to, with somebody who was trying to take over the world. You know, I mean, there was a lot of really good, fertile stuff to act there.
I think my favorite Jon Stewart line is, "And you can kiss my axe."
Oh, right. That's so funny. I think the other aspect, the UPS guy, character I did on Mad TV is also one of my favorites. Just cause that's something I started doing on stage at the Groundlings. And again, I got to do the character over time and let it evolve. And that's really rare, you know, that you get a chance to really live with a character and, you know, help it grow.
Mm. You've, most of the stuff that I've seen you voice and voice acting has mostly been like good guys and heroes and all that good stuff. But what, like, as far as I know, you haven't really had a chance to do villainous characters. I could be wrong in that, but like, what type of characters do you prefer? Good guys, bad guys, you know, serious type of characters or funny characters?
I prefer well-written characters, but you are wrong.
Okay, well, that's fine.
I played Vamp in Metal Gear
Solid. Oh, that's right.
Who's pretty much a bad guy.
Yeah, he's pretty much evil incarnate. Wow, I forgot about Vamp. Oh.
But I'm trying to think. No, you're right. In general, I think I tend to not play... I don't play as many heavies as I do... heroes.
Yeah, and when I said that, I was thinking more towards cartoons. I hadn't even thought of Vamp, and then I had found out in doing research, I was like, wow, Phil did Vamp? Holy wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm very proud of that one, because it doesn't sound, it certainly doesn't sound like me, and it doesn't sound like, you know, many of the characters I've played. I mean, there are a handful that are in the same... or a similar vein, you know, Sig in Jack and Daxter, Jon Stewart, Chris in Mercenaries, that's another video game. They're in a similar vocal range.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're, you know, distinct sounds, but, you know, they're all big guys, you know, with deep voices.
So what's so different about Vamp, like, with your own voice? Did they use effects on that, or is that you doing a voice?
It's, well, I think the main thing, no, there, I don't think there were any effects. It's backwards. On Vamp, I'm mostly talking on the inhale instead of on the exhale. Well, my queen. You know, I'm basically taking in air almost as I talk.
Oh, wow.
I mean, not literally, but it's restricting the flow of air so much. It makes it really hard to give it any volume, but it also gives it that...
It gives him that creepy feeling.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Because, basically, it sounds like he's dead.
Yeah, he's not a character that has, like, a not a high-pitched tone, but he's not a character, as you said, that has a lot of volume. He's that dark background-type character.
Right.
Almost, where his voice, when he talks, he's, like, he's in the background from all of the other characters in Metal Gear.
Right, right. That's, yeah, it's fun to play that. I mean, it's also, I'm trying to think... like the big loud. I mean, there was a show, a video game. Is it Darkstalkers? Just came out last year. Or I play, you know, not a hero or a villain, but like the evil exposition guy. You know, where's you? You know, it's like the Tales of the Crypt kind of voice. and that the best thing about that one was he doesn't fight. So you don't have to do any death screams.
Yeah.
That's always got to be a perk when you're doing the Foley and the sound effects of being punched and kicked and in comparison to something like Jon Stewart where you're always have to make those little quips and, oh, could you do it like you're getting hit in this area of the body instead?
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, Justice League, we had a lot of fighting noise and grunts and strains, not as much as a video game, just because you're not doing, you know, 6 hours of record animation, but 30 minutes. The toughest thing about Justice League, especially at the beginning, was the ring. You know, it's a power ring. It's about willpower. But it's an animated show, so there needs to be a sound when he does something. But logically, I had a really hard time justifying. It's like, well, why does he have to make a sound when he's beaming something? You don't make a sound when you, like, turn on a light switch. You know, that's what it is. It's will. It's mental. It's like, no, just we need a strain. Like, all right, pretend his arm's really heavy. Yeah. But if you think about it, like, a Green Lantern ring really should be the most silent weapon ever.
Yeah. You know? Very true.
I guess I'd have to agree on that.
You know, I mean, there's actually even a question of, would it make a sound when it struck something?
Yeah.
But I guess it's a solid light thing, so... Or is it? I don't know. Or is it just a manifestation of the will? Is he moving that thing with his mind?
I think it's a manifestation of a solid hologram moved by his mind, but...
That's what I want. I want the invisible... Give me the invisible ring. It's like, yeah, I don't think I just see, like, a giant green hammer. I just want to... Just like, I'm going to point my ring and push him away. How about that?
Awesome.
Although I love the fact, because they made a conscious decision... on Justice League, that Jon Stewart did not make shapes.
Not until later he didn't, yeah.
You know, it was like, because they were, you know, this was a military guy. This was a no-nonsense guy. He's not going to make a boxing glove or a bow and arrow. He's like, yeah. No, I'm going to make a beam. If I need to shoot at somebody, I will make a beam.
Yeah. you want to take the next one there, Lupus?
Sure. So how did you fall into Samurai Jack? The show won several Emmy awards and nominations. And did any of your other roles have nominations to their credit?
Samurai Jack, I believe, was a simple audition. It's funny because I do remember that I auditioned for it at the same... recording studio where I auditioned for for Static Shock at a different time. But no, they were both just things that I went in with a bunch of other guys and we all tried out for it and I got picked very, very fortunately. Yes, so Futurama has won a few Emmys, I believe. Static Shock won a Humanitas Award for an episode we did about gun violence in a school, which is a really, really powerful episode.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, it's so good. That show was really vastly underrated.
That show is a really good... It's got a lot of social commentary stuff. I mean, it hits on a lot of hard issues.
Yeah, occasionally. But mostly, it's funny because... Dwayne McDuffie, who just passed away recently, you know, co-created the character. And it's funny. I think because the character was a young black guy, it seemed like it was taking on, you know, or had more of an agenda than it otherwise might have. 'Cause most of the episodes were really just about, you know, him dealing with his life, you know, his sister who annoys him, trying to keep, you know, the identity a secret, you know, trying to impress the girl, but without, you know, I mean, the same, many of those storylines could be in a Spider-Man comic. And occasionally we really did, you know, make specific use of, you know, the character's racial uniqueness. There's one episode at the beginning of, I think, third season or fourth season where Virgil, the character's family, goes to Africa and he encounters an African superhero and an African villain. And it's funny because, again, that could be any character. You know, I guess Peter Parker could have gone to England. It's like, well, your great granduncle lives here, and you know, and encountered somebody. But I think when you make it Africa, people think of it as more of a political thing, you know. But really, most of the time, it was just stories. And certainly, that story about a gun in a school could apply to anybody. But I also, what you're talking about, I think, is part of the DNA of the character, because Milestone. The line of comics that Static came out of was rooted in a social consciousness. You know, the creators really made an effort to have ethnic diversity and, you know, as well as economic diversity. I mean, they were thinking about it consciously, whereas the vast majority of comic books had that stuff in them, but it was unconscious. You know, Bruce Wayne, a wealthy millionaire, you know, like, that's not a comment on Depression era economic policies.
Yeah.
You know, although nowadays, I guess somebody might think it was.
Okay. So what was your favorite exclamation they had you say on Futurama?
I don't know. I don't really have the one that I remember the most, I think, was the first one, you know, Great Lion of Zion. I mean, after that, you didn't really get invested because you knew it wasn't coming back. But it was really just to see how they were up to the challenge of creating more. You know, I think in the last season, did I even have any? It's definitely tapered off.
Yeah.
I think the well might be close to running dry.
Oh, that stinks.
Oh. So, kind of like the pinky in the brain where, you know, what's going to happen this week?
Right. But I think that I'm sure, you know, David Cohen and the writers have yet to disappoint. So I bet you they've got some packed away somewhere.
What was it like playing two radically different characters between Static and Green Lantern, even sometimes in the same episode? Like, I know you were adult Static in, I should know this. I did a podcast on it, I should know. Once in Future Thing, the Once in Future Thing part 2, where you were adult Static and you were also John Stewart. What's it like playing those two different, very different characters in the same place, same episodes?
Well, oh God, it was always a blast. Anytime I got to have the characters cross over, because GL came into a couple of Static episodes,
yep.
And Static went into, I think, one GL episode, Justice League episode. And although the biggest challenge was the one you're talking about, because for me, I always want the voices to sound distinct.
Right.
You know, it's funny because a lot of people say, oh, I can always tell when it's you, which I appreciate the spirit of what they're saying, like, oh, thank you. But really, in my gut, that's the worst thing for me to hear.
But I won't tell you that, because honestly, every time I see you do it, I've seen something you've done, I'm like, well, wait, that was Phil LaMarr? No way.
See, that I love to hear. That I love, because I really do, you know, strive to not go over the same ground.
Right.
But it's difficult. I mean, you know, the human voice only has so many, you know, variations. So when I had to do John Stewart and an adult Static, I mean, John Stewart and kid Static, that's easy. That's cake. That's, you know,
you place one down here, and that's, you know, that's a very low.
And the other placement is real high. I mean, even if I didn't make an effort to separate them, those two voices are going to sound different.
Yeah.
But now you say, well, take this voice and make them 50 years old. It's like, oh, okay. So I've got to figure out what that guy sounds like grown up. And not only grown up, but aged. And make sure it doesn't sound anything like John Stewart, which is really more the challenge I put on myself. I don't think anybody else was saying, well, they can't sound anything alike. But I really didn't want them to sound alike.
Right.
So the trick was to give Static the texture of a 50-year-old man, but not the same texture that John Stewart has. Mm-hmm. You know, which, you know,
John Stewart is younger and more vital. You know, he's got a deep voice, and, you know, you've got a little bit of that rumble behind it.
So, and also at this point, they'd established that Static was the almost the most powerful hero on the planet. So I got to take his energy down to, you know, something like almost godlike. You know, he's not expending a lot of energy. So I made him a little calmer, and I made his speaking voice, I pitched it in a, made it a higher register.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because my thinking was, if you talk like this when you were 14 or 15,
your voice isn't suddenly going to go down here.
You know, your voice is just, you're going to grow up, you're going to become a man, you're going to start, you know, talking, you know, as an adult, and then you'll slowly become older and add a little texture, but your voice won't get lower. It'll just become a different voice. You know?
That's so cool.
That's amazing.
So that, and fortunately it, I was pretty pleased with how it turned out.
We talked earlier about your ties to Star Wars. As far as the Clone Wars, did you try to do a Jimmy Smits impersonation for Bail Organa? Or how did you make it your own?
No. The idea was to do Jimmy Smits, because they wanted the characters, you know, that were established in the movie, in the movies, to be carried over into the animated series. We're all, although I think they've all shifted over time. I mean, when James Arnold Taylor started doing Obi-Wan, you know, he was consciously doing a Ewan McGregor impression.
Mm-hmm.
But I would venture to guess that if you played what he's doing as Obi-Wan now up against Ewan's Obi-Wan, it probably sounds fairly different.
Right.
And I'm sure the same is true of my Bail Organa. It's, we've all basically sort of, we started with, you know, the voices of the movie actors, and then as you get different storylines and they do different things, the voices change, you know? Right. Well, Kit Fisto, fortunately, didn't have a voice in the movie. He was played by a woman. It's funny because you look at Anakin in Clone Wars, and there's not really a disconnect. You don't think, hey, that doesn't sound anything like the Anakin in the prequels. Maybe it's because, I don't know, people maybe aren't as invested in the Anakin in the prequels vocally. But yes, I was doing my best Jimmy Smits impression. Captain Antilles, these droids will go with you. And I want the protocol droids mind wiped. You know.
That's awesome. Oh, wow. That's so awesome.
Okay, so how do you feel about zombies since you are on the Walking Dead motion comic?
You know what's funny? I've never been a big zombie media person. You know, I remember playing Resident Evil early, you know, like 2 in the arcade and stuff, and, you know, being appalled by the voice acting. But I'm not big into zombies, but when I started reading the Walking Dead comic, it was just hands down one of the best comic books of whatever kind I'd ever read. So because of that, I was really excited to be involved in the motion comic. Just to be involved in Walking Dead in any way, shape, or form was, you know, was a pleasure.
Cool.
Very awesome. We are both huge Transformers fans.
I think that's a little bit of an understatement.
Yeah. Well, considering my screen name is TFG1 Mike, yeah.
Right.
Did you go back and watch any of the Generation 1 Transformers episodes to see what Scatman Carruthers had done with Jazz to get your own unique style for him in Transformers Animated? Did you watch any of the previous incarnations of Jazz, or did you just bring your own thing to him?
Well, No, I did not. One, because they said they didn't want it to sound like the old jazz.
Okay.
And also, once you get Scatman Crothers in your head, you know, it's stuck there.
I mean, yeah.
He's such a distinct voice, and he's such a good actor. You know, I mean, you know, it would just be, I think it would have made it much harder to do what they wanted to do, which was give it a little separation from the previous, you know, iteration, but tie it in. I mean, they wrote the characters somewhat differently. Mm-hmm. So it was basically just to play the character as he was written now.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, because I would have loved to have been able to do a Scatman Crothers. that would have been, you know. Megatron! You're going down! You know, but...
I really, really love what you did with jazz. I mean, I love Scatman's version for what that was in that context of the old cartoon, but just what you did with jazz was just awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, they had a really cool take on it and a really specific idea, and it was fun to, you know, just bring that to life.
I'm going to put a link in the chat here to a website for an action figure. Do you own any of the action figures of the characters you've voiced or done at all?
Let's see. I have a John Stewart somewhere.
Now, what I've linked you to...
Oh, and I have a Samurai Jack Maquette.
Oh, cool. What I linked you to was they just announced this year at New York Toy Fair that more Justice League Unlimited figures are coming this year, and they're going to do an adult Static.
Oh, yes. I think I heard about that.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, well, yeah. Too little, too late. No, there was always this the rumor that the reason Static was canceled was that we didn't have a toy deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, because the ratings, I mean, we won our time slot, you know, years running.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in network Saturday morning cartoons, a lot of times people say that the cartoons are a loss leader for the merchandise.
Yeah.
They don't really care how the cartoon does as long as it sells some toys. And, yeah, and for some reason, they never made any Static toys. I think the only Static toy prior to this one that's about to come out was like a Burger King giveaway.
Yeah.
I remember that.
You know, which is a shame.
Yeah. I would have loved to have seen, especially in the JLU style of figures that they have for the Justice League Unlimited toy line now, even though that toy line is ending this year, I would have loved to have seen like a Static and an Ebon and a Gear and, Gear could have backpack as an accessory. That would have been so cool.
No, absolutely. But I don't know. I never understood that. I mean, there are so few teen heroes.
Right.
I would have thought it would have been a slam dunk.
Yeah.
You know?
Before Michael asks his next question, I have to I'm a huge Phineas and Ferb fan, and I have to give a shout out to the street performer.
Yeah, no, that show is so fun. And the guys who make it are so talented. Swampy and Dan Povenmire. I mean, I've been fortunate to work with some really, really talented people. You know, Genndy Tartakovsky, Matt Groening, David X. Cohen. You know, Swampy, Dan, Seth MacFarlane, you know, these guys are, you know, Adam Burton, they're all just really amazing writers, you know, very funny people. You know, most of them are artists as well, you know, and those guys also, you know, Dan and Seth, they can write, they can draw and do voices, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Every voice actor seems to have a method for remembering which of their voices go with which of their characters, especially if they're on a show where they voice a good deal of those characters, like you did in King of the Hill, Futurama, and other shows. How do you keep all of your voices straight?
Usually you try to find a line. What do people call it? A key line or... a hook, something that, you know, usually you say as the character early on when you're first discovering where the voice is, and it helps you find the placement physically, you know, in your throat, and it helps you find the vibe of the character. I know on Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, I played a character named Wilt, right. And I knew whenever I went in, because a lot of times we had big breaks between when we would record, and then like 5 weeks later we'd do the next episode, which makes it harder to hold on to the character. Yeah. So I would just have to go, oh, hey, I'm sorry. No, okay. You know? And that would help me remember where I get that voice. And again, once you've been doing it for a while, it becomes a little easier.
Yeah.
Although I think sometimes the reason a voice changes, you know, because you'll hear, you know, you listen to first season of something and then fourth season, and there's a slight difference. I think sometimes that is because the voice is finding its natural place in the actor. You know, because you'll start out doing something, I'm doing this guy, and then maybe it hurts, or it's not comfortable, or you're not able to repeat it the same way as often, or they write something for that character to do that this voice just can't express. So, you know, oh, I'm sorry. And then all of a sudden, the voice drops down to here. And so, like, by fourth episode, this voice becomes this voice.
Yeah.
And then it stays. And usually you'll find that it doesn't change after that, unless, you know, you're like Mel Blanc and doing it 30 years later. Yeah, I love listening to, like, 70s Bugs Bunny versus 40s Bugs Bunny. Always cracks me up.
It's funny you answer that as far as how you keep track of it is, you know, you just have to, you know, get a line piece or something like that. A funny thing, that when I talked to Jason Marsden the other day, he said, oh, they have this great thing at work called an archive, and they, you know, we just asked them to play us a line.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you always hope that they have reference.
Yeah.
And most of the time they do.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it's something you're doing regularly. But sometimes they don't. So you have to have, you know, something to fall back on.
Yeah.
You know, that's the worst thing, is that, like, you go in and it's a character, like a secondary character that you did, you know, two seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, and we brought back so-and-so. Great. What does he sound like again? And then, like, I remember, I think it was a couple of Futurama episodes where they brought back some, like, character from second season. We were doing one of the DVD movies, and they're like, what does that guy sound like? Like, I don't know. And we had to actually send somebody to the office to get the DVDs that had been sold and find an episode.
Oh, wow. Know?
And, like, okay. All right, right.
See, in the thousands of recordings you've done over your career, what are some of the funniest things, whether it be mistakes someone made or practical jokes that someone pulled that you've had to been a party to or a witness to?
And just a preface before you answer this, you don't have to worry about whether we're a PG-13 network. We're not.
Oh.
So if it was something where it was something gross or inappropriate, we're all about inappropriate.
Oh, God. Well, there's two things that come to mind. I remember when we were – one is sort of just sort of an ongoing thing. When we were doing Justice League, Susan Eisenberg, who voiced Wonder Woman, just had such an incredibly sexy voice that George Newbern and I, because we had our mics next to each other, sometimes she would say a line, completely innocuous line, but in that voice it was just like hot. And, like, she would say it, and I would think, oh, my God, that was hot. And I'd look over at George, and he'd have the exact same thought and the same look on his face. I'm like, right? He's like, right, I know, right? You know, and so then you go, Joe's like, I'm sorry, can you play that line back? And, in fact, email it to me for my personal archives.
Oh, no.
As far as, like, this was sort of a practical joke. I worked on a show called Evil Con Carne.
Mm-hmm.
Maxwell Adams did it for Cartoon Network as part of it was Billy and Mandy and Evil Can Carne. It was the Grim Adventures of
Billy and Mandy.
Yeah, no, originally it was called Grim and Evil.
Oh, you're right.
And we were evil and they were grim. And then the show got half canceled. Our half.
Oh.
That was the best part, though. I loved Evil Can Carne.
Although Billy and Mandy was funnier. I mean, the character of Billy is just so hilarious and silly. But there was one time, because Frank Welker, I was the disembodied brain of an evil mastermind that was attached to a dancing circus bear, voiced by Frank Welker. And, of course, Boskov, the bear, didn't talk. He just made bear sounds, which Frank is amazing at. And I remember after one record, Frank was saying, oh, gosh, everybody here is so funny. We should do an improv episode where everybody just gets to, you know, really just play. And then they did it. You know, we came in one day and Adam said, guess what? We're doing Frank's improv episode. And I turned to look at Frank's like, oh, great. Yeah, it's fine for you. All you got to do is grunt and growl. The rest of us actually have to make up shit. But there was one beat in the improv episode. Because what they gave us was a sheet with basically, this is a scene where these three things happen, and then there's another scene where these three things happen, and then we would just make everything up within that context. And I remember at one point, Hector Concarney says something to Boskov, like, Boskov, why don't you, and it was like this long, like, juggle that chainsaw while running around the base of the tree and doing the tumbling act. Like some long series of things that the bear had to do. And, you know, normally, because I'm an improviser, normally you don't do that because that's fuck you improv. That's labeling your partner with something that is, if not impossible, incredibly difficult to do. But I felt okay about it because the bear doesn't talk. All he has to do is, like, make some grunts and groans. But then Frank Welker proceeds to make a series of bear sounds that sound exactly like what I had laid out. He did the sound of a bear juggling a chainsaw while running around. I mean, everything I just laid out, he actually made it sound like he was doing with nothing but grunts and growls. And it was absolutely just jaw-dropping.
You know? So would you say that jaw-dropping explains Frank Welker and his awesomeness?
Almost, because jaw-dropping explains his talent, but it doesn't take into account the fact that he's also one of the nicest, warmest, most genuine people you will ever meet. You know, so it's like if Einstein was the quarterback and also, you know, the person who saved your life when you drove off the bridge. You know, he's just like so many good things all in one package. You know?
Right, yeah.
Because usually somebody who's that talented, they make up for it in lacking something else, you know, be it humility or self-awareness. Or he's like, wow, he's really talented. Kind of a dick. But, you know, but he's all of it together. And it's amazing.
Yes, it is so amazing. Kind of switching gears here a little bit, you've been to some of the various Comic-Con and fan conventions and stuff like that. How do you feel about the conventions themselves, and how do you feel about just fans coming up to you and saying, oh my God, I loved you in this, or oh my God, I loved you in that, or whatever? How does that make you feel when you're at these conventions? And do you go to the conventions sometimes just for yourself, or do you only go if you're asked to go?
I have, you know, like a family and kids, so like time is at a premium, so I don't get to go just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, I would go to San Diego every year if, you know, time wasn't a factor.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I mean, I would like to go to most of the comic book conventions because I am a comic book guy, and, you know, getting to meet the people whose work I've been reading since, you know, I was a child is always just so much fun. I remember a couple of years ago, I got to present at the Eisner Awards at Comic-Con, and I got to meet Jerry Robinson, the guy who co-created the Joker. And it was just like, you know, it was a fanboy moment. It was amazing. And it's great getting to meet, you know, writers and artists, you know, get a drawing every now and again. As far as meeting the fans, too, that's always really fun. It's funny because I didn't realize that it actually is work until I went to the first convention, and at the end of the day, I almost lost my voice. I'm like, why am I tired? I've been sitting down all day. And then you realize, no, you've been talking for right. 8 hours straight.
Right.
Over the din of, you know, a convention floor.
Yeah. See, the funny thing for me is, like, you know, you're talking about, you know, sitting somewhere and just talking for a long amount of period of time. Last year's San Diego, I wasn't able to go, but a couple other podcasters and I got together, and as the news came in from the convention, I sat through an entire and talked through an entire 6 hour podcast.
Oh, wow.
Covering what the news was that came out of San Diego Comic-Con last year.
And wasn't it taxing?
Honestly, no.
No?
For me, for some strange reason, I can sit here and I can podcast and I can, as long as I have stuff I can talk about, I can sit here for hours on end and just do it.
And you never get your
voice? I've never lost my voice.
Great.
I've been podcasting since 2008. With Geekcast Radio Network, we produce anywhere from 5 to 12 podcasts, sometimes weekly. And I'm a voice on most of them. And I don't know, it's something where I've never, ever lost my voice in the last 3.5, 4 years.
Right. Well, I mean, no. I mean, it takes a lot to actually lose your voice.
Right.
Although, I mean, honestly, for most people, because it's funny, because a lot of people will talk about voiceover, and it's like, I can do that. I talk all the time. And because we do. All of us talk, you know, yeah. The vast majority of us.
Right.
And it really does take a lot before you're even aware of your voice. You know, if you're screaming for 20 minutes, then you feel like, wow.
Yeah, then you feel it.
I feel it, you know. I mean, generally, I've never had an issue in a animation session. You know, we go 4 hours. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember that very first convention, just a lot of, hey, how are you? And I realized after a while, I'm like, okay, I'm going to stand up when people come, because then we're talking face to face, as opposed to me sitting at a table and yelling up to you over the, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe next time I'll bring a microphone and an amp. I think it'll be easier just to talk on a microphone.
Hello. Hi. No, thank you very much for coming.
I have to admit, it was a funny mental image of you with a giant bullhorn just right. You know, shaking people's hands.
That's so awesome.
The only bad thing about the conventions for me is because I do animation and, you know, some of it is for kids, and you're out there signing and, you know, it's $20 for an autograph, and there'll be a child who actually likes one of the cartoons and, you know, he doesn't have 20 bucks. And you're just like, oh, hi, you know.
Mm.
And just like, I'm sorry, it's work. That's really the only downer. Getting to talk to people and, you know, hear how this stuff has, you know, positively affected their lives. I had one guy we were at a con in Florida, and he was talking about how, you know, he was in the Gulf, you know, fighting, and he got to watch these animated stuff, and, you know, the Justice League stuff really meant a lot to him, you know, to have that, to remind him of home, to ground him, and also to have that heroic image just, you know, helped him get through what he had to get through. And, you know, that is something that when you're in a booth recording, you know, words on a page, it would be very hard to conceive of, you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I enjoy the conventions. The comic book. I went to an anime convention once and felt very out of place because I don't know anime.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it sort of made me feel like a civilian at Comic-Con. You know, like if people go by in these bizarre costumes, like if that's Cyclops, it makes sense.
Yeah.
If you don't know, if somebody comes by with like a giant key or something, you're like, wow, they put a lot of work into that. And I have no idea what it is.
You know? In doing research, I just searched your name on YouTube and it came up with, I don't know, a convention from 2009 that you were at. And it was somebody interviewing you. And I almost thought, wow, it's going to be like, you know, they're interviewing him. And all of a sudden, Maurice LaMarche pops into frame. And it's like, oh, wow, it's like impromptu voice acting session. I thought that was so cool. What is some advice you could give for people that want to get into voice acting and stuff like that?
That's a tough one because everybody's path is different. I mean, I have friends who started out as stage actors. I have friends who started out as singers, friends who started out as recording engineers, mm-hmm. You know, and found their way into voiceover. You know, some people have really distinctive voices. Some people have really great performing skills. And it's about, you know, strengthening your weaknesses and accentuating your strengths, whatever they are. So it's really hard to give general advice. My Facebook fan page, I got this question a lot, and I've tried to turn the discussion board into kind of a clearinghouse of information. I've asked, you know, my friend Tommy Smeltzer, who started out as an engineer and got into voiceover, he says the first piece of advice he gives anybody is read out loud for an hour a day, every day for 3 weeks, then come back to me.
Right.
You know, and which is really good advice because one, that gets you used to using your voice, hearing your voice,
right,
and reading. And the thing is, if you're not reading that with any sort of inflection and, you know, attitude and acting, you're going to get bored way before you finish that hour. So you're going to have to get good in order to finish the exercise.
Right.
And he said he's never had anybody come back. But you know, there are a few things. There's links to Steve Bloom has something on his website. Dave Mitchell, you know, Keith Ferguson. They all have, you know, their answers to that question. And I think the amalgamation of that knowledge is better than any one of us giving our take on it. You know, because getting five answers, you know, parts of each of those will apply to you. You know, whoever you are and wherever you're coming from.
Right, yeah. Are there any upcoming projects that you'd like to tease us with that you're going to be working on, like any new stuff that's in your world, whether it be real, you know, live action or voice acting?
Let's see. We're doing more Clone Wars, more Futurama, more Family Guy. For people who are in L.A., I'm doing an improv show in April and May at the Groundlings Theater called The Black Version, which is a group of improvisers, myself, Gary Anthony Williams, Jordan Black, Cedric Yarbrough from Reno 911, Danielle Gaither from Mad TV, we'll take a suggestion of a classic or iconic movie and then do the black version of it. And it's been selling out. It's gone really well. It's a really funny show. Very politically incorrect, but a lot of fun. What else is going on? I think that's it. I just worked on Jason Marsden's web series, Space Guys in Space. Not sure when that's going to be posted. I believe... Gosh, I don't know if there are more Avengers episodes coming or if there are still more to air. Right. And there should be, I think, a few more Young Justice episodes that haven't aired yet.
Yeah, because you play Aquaman in that.
And Double X.
Okay, cool. You mentioned your Facebook fan page. Where can people... Is that where people can interact with you online, or...
Yeah.
Any other avenues online that people...
I'm also on Twitter at Philomar, you know, one long word. Two L's in the middle, two R's at the end.
Right. I like that. Maybe you should stop talking about at Phil Lamar in the third person and just ask him for the interview. That was your reply.
It was funny, actually, Mike, you had you contacted me in the past?
I had contacted your agents, your through DPN. I had contacted the people there, and they had said, "We're sorry at this time, Mr. Lamar just doesn't have time."
And I had
sent you a couple of previous emails to your website address. Yeah. And I just find it funny because I was like, well, I just finished recording the Static Shock episode and I really wish we could have gotten an interview with Phil Lamar. And well, here we are now we've got you.
I know. Yeah. I'm sorry that the timing, didn't work out prior to now.
Yeah. It's all right. We would like to thank Mr. Lamar for taking the time to chat with us here in this special interview. We will ask you to hold the line, and we will be back after this.
Now somebody, anybody, everybody scream!
There are squirrels in my pants!
That girl's got some serious squirrels in her pants.
There are squirrels in my pants!
Tell me what's making you jump like that.
Inside your bee squirrels in my pants.
Ain't got no chickens, ain't got no rats.
Inside your bee squirrels.
Wow, she had actual squirrels in her pants.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Just slightly under an hour is the actual interview clip time for Phil Lamar. You take it, dude.
God, it was awesome. Besides technical difficulties, it was an amazing opportunity to talk to this icon of animation acting.
Yeah.
Acting in general.
Yeah. It was just, you know, it's like I said on the Jason Morrison interview, which you weren't on, but hopefully you'll go back and listen to. I love it when I can just sit here and just kind of, you know, listen to stories of what, you know, the person has done. And Phil was so, so gracious. So awesome to have him
this time.
Yeah, to have him dedicate some of his time to us. Very, very cool guy to talk to. I would love to meet him in person. But just being able to talk to him, it's so well done. You have any other thoughts other than squeeing like an emotional fanboy?
Yeah, I actually kind of want to see him at San Diego Comic Con. Get him a bullhorn.
Ah, yeah. That would be so awesome.
But, yeah. He seemed very laid back and very awesome.
He's very, very cool. And, yeah, I mean, you know, right now is just so, so awesome to talk to him. And yeah, so... I think that's going to do it for this interview. Like I said in the intro to the interview, you're going to hear this on Tooncast's RSS feed and on the Secret Origins RSS feed as well. And that's it for now. I am TFG and Mike, and you are?
Lupus Convoy.
Until next time.
Ah, you must be the new mechanic.
Right, Gil Cooper.
Low Mather. So, Gil, if you're a mechanic, I suppose you know how to change a Lorenz sensor on a Cessna 402. What's the matter, Gil? You don't know how, do you?
Well, sure. You reach behind the altimeter and feel for the metal Y connector, unplug the left side, find the blue wire, thread it through the new sensor housing, reseal the base unit, plug in the test coordinates, and you're in business.
The blue wire?
Hi, I'm Phil Lamar, voice of Green Lantern in Justice League, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.